presenting the pro-life message without appealing to religion.
I think we definitely need to make sure logic is very much involved in the appeal that we're making. I think we do need to appeal to morality, but coming from the perspective that the people we're speaking with can at least initially agree on.
On the feature today, an interview with noted pro-life apologist Stephanie Gray on how to argue the pro-life case to people who don't share a Christian worldview. In the news, more controversy for that publicly funded Christian school in Alberta. It looks like they could lose their public funding. A couple of We Need a Law flag displays over the Canada Day long weekend, and a disturbing new survey on transgenderism.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
A public school board in Camrose, Alberta, has served notice that it's going to cut ties with a small Christian school due to a controversy over the use of biblical texts in the school's curriculum. Alberta has a provision where Christian schools can apply to operate under the authority and operational funding of public boards. Part of that system includes an express understanding that the schools will be able to continue to further their Christian worldview. But earlier this year, the Battle River School Division raised concerns that the Cornerstone Christian Academy in Kingman, Alberta, was including some biblical prohibitions against homosexuality in its curriculum and literature. The board demanded that material be dropped, and that prompted a threat of a lawsuit from the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms in Calgary. Deanna Margell heads the parent group at Cornerstone, and she says for a while there, they thought they had this issue resolved.
We created a joint statement that said that the Battle River Board and its employees would not censor the reading or teaching of the Bible at Cornerstone. And so the controversy at that point, from my perspective, was kind of over. And yet then they added a communications and media protocol addendum to the master agreement, and that would have placed some major restrictions on our ability to effectively communicate with our parents and our community. And we said, you know, we're not comfortable with this. We don't like this. And then it was about 2 days later, we got notice that they terminated the agreement.
As to what happens going forward, Margell says she's not sure how this will play out.
Certainly, we're going to want to keep the school open one way or another, and that may involve talking to other public divisions. There may be provision to work with a different public school board. And, of course, there may be provision for reapplying to operate a private school, but there is some fear that we would not be given the license to do that. And, of course, BRSD has said that they are willing to continue talking with us as well, except they want us to incorporate this addendum that severely restricts our ability to communicate, and that's problematic for us.
If no agreement can be reached with either the Battle River Division or another public school board, the parents at Cornerstone would essentially be left without the bulk of the government funding that they've been getting. We Need a Law hosted a couple of flag displays over the Canada Day long weekend. One of them was in Ponoka, Alberta, and it involved a bit of controversy. As organizers were setting up the display, city crews came along and removed a banner that they'd hung on a fence adjacent to the major highway that runs through the community. When organizers confronted the city workers over that action, they were told that City Hall had received complaints about the event. Once the city crews were shown the permits and paperwork proving the display was legally allowed, they did put the banners back up. We Need a Law's Mike Schutten says they're getting used to this kind of opposition.
People are looking to the state to just shut us up, and the state thinks they can do that. They think they have the authority to do that, even when local groups have got the proper permits in place, the insurance policies, etc.
Schutten was personally involved in the other long weekend flag display, this one in Yarrow, B.C., He says there's another common thread in the opposition that is shown to these displays, and it may surprise you.
Some of the most vocal opponents of what we're doing are middle to later aged men, like in the 40 to 60 year range. I think part of the reason why this is because with abortion being completely legal at any stage for any reason, no questions asked, that actually makes it quite easy for men when they find themselves in a relationship whereby a child is conceived. It's just an easy solution for them. Drive the woman to the abortion clinic, help make the appointments, and the problem essentially goes away for them.
There are plans for almost a dozen more flag displays in various communities throughout the country over the balance of the summer. And finally, a new survey came out last month in the States, and it shows just how far society has moved on the issue of gender confusion. The poll focused on millennials, generally people under 30, and it found almost half of them would be okay with the idea that the government can take away children from parents if those parents refuse to affirm the kids' gender identities. Scott Masson is an associate professor of English at Tyndale University College in Toronto. He says the survey shows that traditional views of family are starting to change, especially in a certain segment of society.
It says that those that are most animated by issues that we would call social justice are in favor of breaking into the family and its historic freedoms in order to justify the ends of what they would call social justice. So it doesn't have any notion of sphere sovereignty.
He says the fact that the poll focused on millennials shows the impact that political correctness has had in the education system.
I've been living with that in the university system ever since the 1980s, and certainly it's the case that millennials, they've experienced nothing but that. They're not used to freedom of expression. If they find a view that they don't like, they're going to have no tolerance for it. And so that loss of liberty, which you see in recent legislation, they're not bothered by that because they never really thought that those liberties really ought to exist as long as social injustice was being done.
We linked to the survey from the Lighthouse News homepage this week. Back with more after this.
Canada is a great place to live, and we enjoy many freedoms, including freedom of religion and freedom of assembly. The Criminal Code protects these freedoms. For example, the code prohibits obstructing a minister who is performing religious duties or disrupting a church service. But a new bill, Bill C-51, would remove this clause. Please send an easy mail to your MP explaining the importance of upholding the freedom to gather for religious, social, or moral purposes without fear of disruption. Visit easy.arpacanada.ca.
And we're back with the program. Special guest this week, Stephanie Gray. Stephanie's an international speaker on the abortion and pro-life issue. She started presenting at the age of 18, given over 800 pro-life presentations across North America. Recently, one of those presentations kind of caught our eye here at Lighthouse News. Stephanie, first of all, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Al. It's great to be on your show.
You speak to some pretty interesting groups. Most recently, you did a Google Talk down in California. Now, not everybody even knows what a Google Talk is or what it's all about. Some background on that, first of all.
Well, of course, we're certainly all familiar with Google. We Google things every day, and the company Google runs a program initially for its staff called Talks at Google, where they bring in speakers 5 days a week. And those presenters are invited to the Google campus, essentially, and staff are invited to attend the various lectures, as well as staff who aren't at that physical location. They're invited to come in an internal live stream program where from other Google offices around the world, they can watch these talks. And essentially, they're presentations by authors, scientists, actors, filmmakers, and people of different backgrounds who come and present basically on their work and their specialty and what they do. And then what Google does is they load these recordings generally to their YouTube channel, and that is how kind of word spread that I gave a Talks at Google presentation.
Now, Google isn't exactly known as an organization that's friendly to the pro-life cause. You know, we've all heard if you enter certain search terms, there's kind of a bias in terms of the way the searches come up. So I guess the real question is, how on earth did you get yourself invited to speak there?
You know, good question. I know we can often have ideas about how certain companies or businesses are, and I have to say I was really impressed with Google in this whole process in which I worked with them. So what happened is, if you go to talk to Google and watch various speakers, usually a Google staff member is introducing the speaker. So staff who work for Google can initiate the process for inviting a speaker. And so there happens to be a staff member at Google who was familiar with my work and reached out to me and told me about the whole Talks at Google program and asked if I would be willing to speak. And of course I said, well, I'm willing, but will they be willing on their end? So I started looking into this Talks at Google program and seeing the other speakers they brought in, and I was very impressed that Google has actually brought in speakers on the range of the political spectrum. Yes, they had just brought in, prior to me, Cecile Richards, the president of Planned Parenthood, but they have also brought in major conservative Christian speakers like Francis Chan, for example. So when I learned that, I thought, okay, maybe they would be receptive. So, you know, I very much believe in speaking the language of your audience. So I crafted a description of my talk that spoke about what I speak on, but very much through the lens of a secular culture. I spoke about human rights, how I'd be appealing to the insights of Holocaust survivor Dr. Viktor Frankl, and I proposed a talk description, and that was submitted, and Google accepted it, and I found myself in April speaking at Google.
You know, I listened to that talk. I had a look at it online. In fact, we're going to link to it from the Lighthouse News homepage this week. And I shared it on social media, and in that share, I used a descriptor, and I'm just going to quote what I wrote because it kind of encapsulated for me what I took away from the talk. I said, there is not a speck of religious presuppositionalism here, just a clear Socratic approach, a logical approach to the abortion question. And then I dared my pro-choice friends to interact with it. But I found it interesting that the whole argument was based on logic rather than appeals to any kind of morality. I honestly didn't know from watching the video that your pro-life position is rooted presumably in your Catholic faith.
Yes, so I mean, certainly I would say I was making some assumptions. I was making the assumption that my listeners believed in human rights. I was making the assumption that my listeners believed in equality, that they believed in the basic moral principle that it's wrong to directly and intentionally kill innocent human beings. However, I did not make explicit appeals to religion, as you pointed out, my Catholic faith, Christianity in general, or any other religious persuasion, because I know not everyone in the audience necessarily is convinced of that. And of course, we do need to evangelize the culture, generally speaking, but I wasn't there for that. I was there to speak on abortion. So I thought, okay, strategically, how do I package my message that essentially appeals to truths that God has written on all of our hearts? As I said, this sense of equality and justice. And so in appealing to that, yes, I have found people to be open to it and receptive to it. And one of my proposals to Google as well was, yes, I'd be very much applying the Socratic method, which when I'm speaking to Christian audiences, I call Jesus's method. Because if you look throughout the scriptures, Jesus is continually asking questions when engaging people in conversation. But so did Socrates. And since I'm speaking to an audience broader than Christians, I thought, well, then I'll call it the Socratic method instead.
Is this the future of the pro-life movement? Do we need to move away from arguments about the morality of abortion, or if you will, the immorality of abortion, and instead make the argument from a purely dispassionate, logical perspective?
You know, I think we definitely need to make sure logic is very much involved in the appeal that we're making. I think we do need to appeal to morality, but coming from the perspective that the people we're speaking with can at least initially agree on. So the moral principle being grounded in, let's say, the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights, or our Charter of Rights and Freedoms, which says everyone has a right to life. These are appeals to morality, but not necessarily appeals explicitly to religion. But we need to very much rely on logic, rely on reasoning, but understand that the human person is more than just our brains. Our hearts are involved as well. And hopefully you would have noticed as well in my presentation that in some of the stories I shared, while there was a lot of appeal to logic, there was also that appeal to the heart, sharing, you know, the stories of people I'd met who made very difficult decisions to carry pregnancies to term, such as a friend of mine who conceived as a result of rape at the age of 12 and did not abort that child. She did the right thing, even though it was hard.
So back to the talk at Google, how was it received? Did you change any hearts or minds, you think?
You know, I am confident based on the experience that I've had speaking to many people that hearts and minds would have been changed. Unfortunately, I couldn't measure that in this particular setting, so I don't have concrete examples. Normally, I survey my audiences and they, you know, fill out questionnaire about their views on abortion before and after the talk. And in this setting, I worked with the format of how talks at Google always runs their presentations, which didn't involve a type of survey afterwards that I was familiar with. But I did get good feedback from various people who heard the presentation and talked about friends that they knew who had also heard the presentation. Certainly, there's some discussion going on now in the comment section under the presentation at the YouTube link.
Final question. We keep hearing, sort of politically at least, that the discussion is over on the life question, that the matter is settled. Given that attitude, do you see any positive possibilities for advancing this discussion, particularly in the Canadian federal context?
I would say, you know, the discussion is only over if we stop discussing it. I think the reality is, as long as people like you and me are talking about the issue and forcing it into the limelight, then it will continue to be discussed, and therefore, absolutely, we can create opportunities, and that's the key word. We create opportunities for it to be discussed, as well as for positive policy decisions to be made in the political sphere. And absolutely, we want to be working to make sure not only abortion is unthinkable, but also that abortion is illegal.
Stephanie, thank you very much for doing this.
Thank you. I appreciate being on your program.
And a programming note to close, we are on summer production schedule here at Lighthouse News. That means the next program is due to be posted on July 25th.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. Questions or feedback? You can leave us an audio comment by going to our homepage, www.lighthousenews.ca, and clicking on the answering machine button at the top of the page. Or you can send us an email, lighthousenews@arpacanada.ca. Be sure to join us again in 2 weeks for another edition of Lighthouse News.